Hey, bro, why keep putting off until tomorrow what you know you need to do today? Go ahead and book a free breakthrough call with us so we can connect you to a community of godly men who can understand your challenges and do life with you as a husband, father, leader, or just as a man without judgment, shame, or rejection. Just go to realmenconnect.com/call. Available times are limited each week, so book your free call today. That's realmenconnect.com/call. Again, that's realmenconnect.com/call. Help us here if you're ready to receive it. As a man, do you ever look at other successful men and find yourself comparing your lack of success to theirs? At this point in your life, do you believe you're living far below your potential as a man? Do you ever feel like God has more for you than you're currently receiving or achieving? Ever wondered if you should be doing more with your life? Well, the late Dr. Miles Rorer once said that the greatest tragedy in life isn't death. The greatest tragedy is to be alive and not know why. Well, Dr. Miles Rorer was a mentor to today's guest, and he's going to walk you along the four steps to releasing your God-given brilliance. You do not want to miss this episode. Real Men Connect is next.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. Each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. Today we have with us Simon T. Bailey. Simon is an executive advisor, career mentor, author, and keynote speaker, and he teaches influencers how to improve themselves and change the world. Simon has 28 years of business experience with six different companies and is the former sales director for the world-renowned Disney Institute based at the Walt Disney World Resort. Simon has spoken to more than 1,000 organizations on six continents, including organizations such as Walmart, Microsoft, Toyota, and TD Jakes MegaFest, just to name a few. Speaker Magazine cited him as one of the top 25 hot speakers shaping the profession today. He was recently inducted into the prestigious National Speakers Association Hall of Fame. Simon has authored seven books, including Release Your Brilliance, Four Steps to Transforming Your Life and Revealing Your Genius to the World, and his newest book, Shift Your Brilliance, Harness the Power of You, Inc., which is receiving also rave reviews. Simon lives in Windermere, Florida with his wife, Renee, and two children. Although I've never met Simon personally, being a speaker and Florida native myself, I've been a longtime fan of Simon, not just because he's a phenomenal speaker, but more so because I've learned through others that he's a phenomenal man of God, which is more impressive to me. One of the many benefits of hosting Real Men Connect is that it's given me an opportunity to reach out and connect with great men of faith like Simon, who I've admired in the speaking industry for years. Simon's work is centered around motivating his listeners and readers on becoming brilliant. So I asked Simon today to be on the show to not only give us some strategies on how we as men can release our brilliance, but also to learn about his own journey in bringing out his own inner brilliance. So that being said, thank you so much, Simon, for joining us on the Real Men Connect podcast.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be with you.
Simon, I told you before we came on air, this has been a long time waiting for me that I wanted to interview you because I've admired you from afar because some of the people I know who know you have to give me some inside information about how you're a strong man of faith, not just a phenomenal speaker. So it does my heart good to know that you agreed to come onto the show, and I can't wait to share you with our audience. Now, Simon, before we always start our show by asking our guests their favorite Bible verse, and I can't wait to hear what yours is and why.
Oh, so Proverbs 8 and 12 is just really, at this season, speaking to me, and it simply says, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and God gives us the knowledge of witty inventions. And what's so interesting, I've just been stuck on, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, because I believe when we understand the Word of God, we recognize that prudence is all about making the right decisions at the right time for the right reason. And so the wisdom, the Word of God, the understanding of God literally comes to us in a greater deposit because we are operating in a prudent mindset.
I love that. I love that, Simon. And as far as you know, we know that you're a speaker, but, you know, you kind of alluded to before we came on the air, you were telling me about your father. So I want to start before we get into what you do, the work you do at the Brilliance Institute. I want to get into your personal story and tell me about your childhood and what led you all the way up to this point now that you're working with people on bringing out their brilliance.
Yeah, so 55 years ago, my father was an immigrant from Jamaica to Florida. He actually picked oranges in Mount Dora, Florida as a migrant worker. And then he and another guy made their way up to Perry, New York, where he picked apples. Father was a very, very hard worker. Everything that I am and ever hope to be, not only do I owe it to God, but I certainly owe it to my father. He used to wake us up at 4:30 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and he would say, get up, do something, clean the house, wash the car, clean the bathroom, make your room up. He did not play. And it's that work ethic, I think, that still it'd be today. I get up at between 4 and 4:30 a.m. And even my son, who is 17, he is early. He's an early riser like I am. I haven't introduced him to the 4:30 a.m. yet, but it's coming.
So you're still waking up at 4:30 in the morning, Simon?
Yeah, I'm up. You know what? If my eyes are still closed at 5:30, there's a problem.
Wow. Yeah, my wife, she's owns a fitness studio, and she gets up at about 4 every morning because she has to be at her studio by 5:30. And right. So I just admire guys like you who can do that. I'm more of a 6:30 person myself.
Yes.
Now, you
yes,
say that he woke up the entire house. How many siblings do you have?
So I have three brothers. Okay. And they are great men all over the world. And yeah, he woke us up, but he taught this work ethic and the power of understanding the best hand that will feed you is the one at the end of your wrist. The world doesn't owe you anything. You've got to make it happen for yourself.
Now, you know, you describe really an ideal home environment with having a dad there, because a lot of our listeners out there, you know, they didn't have their father there in the household. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm assuming, even though I see how great you become now, Simon, were you always the great kid when you're growing up with your family? And did you receive his teaching so easily, or did you butt heads with your dad?
Oh, no. I got plenty of whoopings growing up. In fact, I was so bad at school in my early years that two things happened, as my mom reminds me. They had to go to the school because I had a significant disciplinary problem. I was just hyperactive.
Okay.
So always was into a lot of things. And the second thing that my parents told me is that from about, I want to say 5 years to probably 8 or 9 years of age, my mother used to come in my room at night, and my father did as well while I was asleep. And they would take a bottle of oil, and they would just anoint my head and pray over me for 4 to 5 years that, you know, I would come in line.
Oh, my goodness. See, prayer changes things, right?
Yeah, totally. Well, hey, no, it gets better than that. My grandmother, my father's mother, before she passed away, told me that she prayed for me every day of my life from the time I was in my mother's womb until the time that she passed on. And that was 40 plus years, prayed for me every day with her prayer partner. So I know that I am here by the prayers of a praying grandmother and my father and mother.
Now, I joke my wife often that I say, God, help me pray like a grandmama. Because they pray without ceasing, and man, they are relentless.
Yes.
Now with your siblings, your brothers, mm-hmm. did they cause your family any problems as well, or were they more in line?
They were more in line. I was the trouble child.
Now, where'd you fall in? Were you the oldest, youngest?
I am next to the baby. So there's four of us, four brothers, no sisters, and I'm next to the baby.
Oh, okay.
The baby brother.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the hyperactivity, though. Were there any internal battles that you were going through that made you feel like you needed to act out, or what was going on there?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. When I was 14, 15 years of age, I was playing basketball right across the street from our home. And another boy on the basketball court told me, he said, "You are so ugly. You are black as tar." And it just kind of cut me so much so that I ran home, grabbed my mother's keys, and I ran into the garage, closed the door, put the key in the ignition, because I didn't know how to deal with this. I didn't know how to communicate this to my parents, that I was struggling with self-esteem, self, you know, just my self-concept. And when I was about to turn the ignition in the car and take my life, I heard something say, don't do it. And today I know that it was nothing but the Holy Spirit. But then I didn't really understand how to language that, this voice that said, don't do it. But I was about to take my life because I didn't believe I had self-worth because of what somebody said.
And how old were you at the time?
I was about 15.
About 15 mm-hmm. years. So you were a teenager mm-hmm. at the time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so you struggled then with your identity and your self-esteem. What turned that around for you?
I think from then on, I had just entered into a new high school that I was going to later on that fall. This happened in the summer. So later on the fall, I was going to a new high school. And it's at that high school that I met my English teacher, Miss Rita Lankus. And she said to me, young man, I want you to write a speech and give it before the entire school assembly. And I said, okay. And this was after experiencing tremendous failure in my freshman year in high school, where I went out for the football team, got cut, went out for the basketball team and got cut, went out for track and field. They said, brother, I think you're a little slow. You need to do cross country.
Wow.
So needless to say, by the time I got to my sophomore year and I was 15, you know, I was struggling. I was really struggling. But it was this English teacher that when I look back all these many years, some 31, 32 years later, her words literally changed the trajectory of my life. And I am only doing today because that teacher saw something in me and helped me course correct.
Now, Simon, we know, and you're a dad now, we know that if you create the right environment where the man is fulfilling the role that he's supposed to fill in the household, that makes an opportunity for a kid to succeed that much greater. But even in your household, you had a great dad, and I'm assuming mm-hmm. that your mom and dad had a great relationship. They seem to be on the same page. Why do you still think you struggled even having the male support that you needed in the household?
Sometimes you can have parents who are supportive, but emotionally disconnected. Now, here's what I mean by that. And I say this with all due respect to my father. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I struggle with my dad is he never affirmed or validated me. So even though he modeled how to be a man, emotionally, he was not available. Emotionally, he did not talk to me about what it meant. Now, granted, we had the conversation about the birds and the bees, you know, boy, don't you get no girl pregnant. You know, we had those kind of conversations.
Right, right.
But as far as like, so dad, how should I be thinking? How should I approach things? Because when I look back at my life and I look back at our time together, my dad, he worked all the time. He worked third shift. So when he was coming in, I was heading out the door to go to school. And then he was always involved with the church. So we didn't really do things, and our family vacations, you know, were few and far between. So by the time it got time for me to leave to go to college, he woke up and said, oh my goodness, I didn't spend any time with you. And it wasn't until maybe 2 years before he passed away that we did a quick road trip to go and see his mother who was ailing, and we talked for the first time. And he just unloaded, you know, in a good way. It was really healthy, and I'm glad he did it before he went to the grave, you know. And it really just kind of helped me cement some things. But I was in the home, but dad and I were not connected because we were going in a lot of different directions. And when it came time to discipline, he disciplined me for the bad behavior, but didn't talk to me about the right behavior. I'll tell you a quick little story. Mm-hmm. Not only did I get whoopings with a extension cord or take the switch off the tree and clear the leaves, mm-hmm. this generation will know about that.
Right.
But my dad, I grew up in the era of the Sugar Ray Leonard era. So my dad used to box me.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, he was going to make his point. So, and it's all good, Doc. Kids today would call it abuse, but it was all good. It straightened me out real quick.
You know, I won't even get on you about that, Simon. I remember when my son was maybe about 15 or 16, and I was so upset with him one day, and we went in the garage. He said, what's that? I said, put on those gloves.
Right. I said, I'm tired of talking to you. I said, you better protect yourself because I said, we're going to fight.
No, but I get that. Now, I wanted with your dad, though, obviously, you know, he recognized you get ready to go to college. And then he says, man, I really need to start connecting with my son. Do you think that was a result of his upbringing as being from his Jamaican descent or that he just didn't know as a man how to do that?
It was both, yeah. Both? I've talked to many other Jamaicans, and they've said Jamaican men by nature are not emotionally connected when it comes to fathering. They believe fathering is food on the table, clothes on your back, you know, providing you a life, you know, while they teach you skills to survive. But that's just a part of the from what I have understood, is the culture.
No, so my question, you know, this is now a rhetorical question. I'm saying, so what are what's our excuse now as Americans? Because we're doing the same thing with our children. But, you know, yeah, I'm also my family's from Bahamian descent. And so I've watched the same thing kind of happen in our family. And how did you turn the tide with your children?
Yeah, so my dad did eventually say, I love you. And it was a pivotal moment. I'll tell you about that down the road. But I now tell Daniel and Madison, our daughter, I tell them all the time, and I validate them and affirm them. And what I'm struggling with, I won't say struggling with, but I want to make sure I don't overdo it or overcompensate for me not getting it from my father. So I'm really having to balance it out by giving them love, affirmation, and validation, but also fathering them, because I don't need my kids to like me. I need them to respect me,
right,
so that they can grow and be who they can be and stand on their own two feet.
Fantastic. Now, Simon, I told you the reason why I wanted you on the air, because you talk to companies and you work with leaders about, you know, releasing their brilliance and becoming a brilliant person. And I wanted you to share with us how we become brilliant men, but I want to start by having you define what you determine as being brilliant, so we can all have the same context that you're coming from.
Brilliant is becoming that spark. It's becoming that answer to a problem. It's becoming the solution to whatever situation you find yourself in. It's playing to your strengths and fulfilling God's universal assignment that's in you. That's when you operate in your brilliance. And when you do, you're in your lane. And when you're in your lane, nobody can do what you do better than you.
And man, that's an excellent way of describing that. Now, how'd you come to making this your topic, your anchor topic that you wanted to, your gift to the world? How'd you come to this?
My mentor, Dr. Mark Sharona, said to me a number of years ago, he said, how are you doing? I said, if I had white skin, blonde hair, blue eyes, it would be very easy to succeed in America. And he said to me, you're stuck in your mind and body thinking the pigmentation of your skin shapes your destiny. You weren't born to fit in, you were born to be brilliant. And I said to him, how can you say that? You're a white man.
Right.
And I mean, we're just having an honest conversation. Mm-hmm. And he said to me that when he and his wife, Ruth, first got married, they adopted two young African-American boys. And they've been telling them what they could be instead of what they couldn't be.
Right, right.
And he said, I'm telling you, we're born to fit in. And when he said it, Joseph, something just unlocked in me, because nobody had even told me that I was born to be brilliant. Even my father, even though he may have thought that, he didn't articulate it. And literally, when Dr. Sharona said it to me, I just went to my computer and I just started banging out, like I was processing this whole thing of born to be brilliant. And I would be driving down the street and just boo-hoo crying, because, you know, as men, we don't go to see a shrink. We right. keep it within.
Right.
So what I realized, I was processing it, and this was my universal assignment. This was me finding that we all have it within us, but we have to find it. So literally, I started researching and came across some of the research of Dr. Howard Gardner, professor of education at Harvard, where he says, you know, children up until the age of 4 are born at the genius level, but as they got older, his researchers discovered same group of children that only 10% were still operating at the genius or brilliance level. And in their late 20s, early 30s, only 2% were still operating at the genius or brilliance level. So the question I had is, where does this genius or brilliance go? This universal assignment, this purpose, this finding your lane. It didn't go anywhere, but it became buried by a society that says, color within the lines, sit down, give it back. And the more you continue to hear what you can't do, where you can't go, and who you can't become, there's a path in the brain that shuts you down. So I realized this had to be my life's work. I had to teach the world about how to be brilliant in an average world.
Fantastic. You know, that also kind of goes back to what you were saying before about receiving the affirmation from the Father.
Right.
If you're constantly being told what you're not or what you can't do, that's going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I guess we all play a part then in helping the people around us kind of develop their brilliance. Is that correct?
Totally.
Okay. Now, you talk about the four C's in releasing your brilliance or the four steps. And I noticed, you know, the pattern I noticed that it seems to be centered around the diamond. Am I mistaken on that?
No, that's spot on. Yeah, that's
okay,
spot
so
on.
I'm assuming that's intentional. So that I want is. You to break that down to us for us. I want you to explain to us what those four steps are and how did you come up with these?
Yeah, so when Dr. Sharona said to me, you weren't born to fit in, you're born to be brilliant, I started to try to understand, okay, what does brilliance look like in just an everyday simplistic term? And I came across a diamond. And a diamond, as all of us know, is formed through heat, pressure, and change. And the four C's of a diamond is clarity, cut, color, and carat. So clarity, as I looked at it, is all about understanding, so what am I supposed to be doing with my life, right? How do I get really clear? Then the cut of the diamond is, how do I take all of the experience, setbacks, failures, mistakes, leverage those to move forward? The color of the diamond has to do with what's the worldview that shapes how I think. And then the carrot of the diamond is, how big can I dream? What's the thinking that I have? What am I going to go after? Because now I really believe.
Oh, that is awesome. I love that. I love that. Now, which one do you think men struggle with the most?
I think men struggle with the cut of the diamond, the experience. Mm-hmm. Because when I look at my life, for a long time, I was ashamed of many of the mistakes that I had made. I was ashamed that I didn't go to college 4 straight years, that I was on the 10-year plan.
Right.
Right. So I was ashamed of that. I think I was ashamed of being born to a Jamaican father and an American mom, that it wasn't the traditional family like most people would say. So I struggled with that. And it wasn't until that I embraced what I felt were my deficiencies and really owned it, right, that my life began to move in a different direction. And so I think men struggle with just own it, forgive yourself, stop beating yourself up, and let it go. I recently, probably in the last year or so, went to see a counselor. I've never been to counseling at all, but just need to just go and talk to somebody, just some professional help, not because, you know, I was crazy or anything. I just needed, like, have my moment on the sofa.
Right.
It was probably the best therapy that I have ever had in my life, because everything that I kept within, I just got it out. I just got it out in that setting, and I'm better for it.
Now, Simon, you mentioned that most men struggle with the cut, then that framing their past experience. And we always hear, we tell them, you need to let go of the past. But in practical terms, what advice would you give that man? Say, well, I've been trying to let it go. I just can't. And they realize that it's holding them back. Their past, they're being anchored to their past. What would you suggest they do first or whatever to kind of just break this cycle of oh, woe is me?
Yeah, I think three things. Number one, what does the other side of whatever you're holding on to, what does it look like? How do you describe it in detail? How do you begin to understand, when I let go of this, I'm expecting this to come, right? That's number one. I think number two, who is that trusted friend that you can go to and be totally raw and transparent with, who is your ride or die person, that person that will go to the grave with you, that you can just say, you know what, I need to just get really real. And I have a couple of guys in my life that we just talk, we lay all the cards on the table, right? And then I think the third thing we have to do is, how will I celebrate as I come through this? Because I think the celebration gets you a little bit more excited than holding to the pain of the past, right? So you have something to look forward to. And I think everyone listening to us, if they would just take those three approaches and decide which one works for them, they may just experience that breakthrough that they've been longing for.
Well, Simon, that is really good. And I'm hoping that we will be able to put that in the show notes as well, because I know a lot of men just get stuck. And they, you know, no one wants to be stuck, but they have no idea where to start. Now, you mentioned that that's where men struggle with the most, with the cut. Now, do as far as with you, when you went through this process of becoming, quote, brilliant, which area did you struggle with the most? Was it the same thing or was it another area?
It's really all four of them, but I think the one area that really is the tripwire to the other three was clarity. I had to really get over what I call the CIC, comparison inferiority complex. So I'll give you an example. Not too long ago, I was invited to go to the 25th year reunion for Morehouse College, which if I would have graduated from there, my class would have graduated in 1990. And because I didn't go the traditional path, I went to Georgia State and I went to a few other colleges in between. After I left Morehouse that one year, they still invited me back as being a part of the class of 86 that came in. And while I was there, I was like, you know, oh, these guys are doing amazing thing, amazing men all over the world. And I was just like really impressed. And for a moment, I felt small, like, oh my goodness, I'm not where they are and look at what they're doing. And then all of a sudden, I literally had to just verbally slap myself and say, snap out of it. You are where you are because of the choices that you've made. And when you stop comparing where you are to where they are, you can embrace the journey even more. And what I recognize is most men, when you come to a place of clarity, you have to appreciate what you've accomplished. Don't measure it in dollars and cents and houses and cars, on and on. Measure it by the impact of, am I healthy, number one? Am I in my right mind, number two? Have I been a good husband? Am I a good father? Am I a good sibling? Measure it in that regard. And then when you do, you quickly recognize that I'm clear, I'm happy, healthy, and whole right where I am.
Absolutely. That is awesome. And you talk about comparison. I've heard from women that they say women struggle with comparison even more so than men. They say it's the equivalent of how we struggle with lust. They say women struggle with comparison, and which I find it hard to believe that. But I'm like, is that bad? Yeah. But with this comparison thing, which I think is really, really important, because we live in a society that seems to be bombarding us to – it keeps forcing us to compare ourselves because it's looking, you know, you don't have enough. You need to have more. As far as – when you're dealing with men, and I know you do work with men and you have a heart for men like I do, what is it that they seem to be measuring themselves by that makes them, helps them try to determine whether or not they're success or failure? I know there's a lot of different measurables, but what seems to be the go-to thing for guys to say, I'm measuring my success based on this?
Money, title, and cars. Wow. I know that sounds so trite.
Yeah, it sounds so superficial. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, how much money you make, what's your title? Whenever you get a group of guys together, you know, hey, how you doing, man? Great, where are you from? Okay, so what do you do? That question is the question. And then when the what do you do question comes up, there's now this jockeying to say, oh, and I did this, and I do this. And you never really get to know the person because you're trying to impress the person you're talking to by showing them how well-traveled you are, how many deals you've done, that you're the man, that you know you are the biggest person in the room. And it's called ego. And ego stands for edging greatness out. Mm-hmm. Because it's this jockeying to impress you with, I've got the money, I've got the car, I've got the title.
You know, and I'm thinking, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Simon, that if you mentioned the first one about clarity, if you're really strong in clarity of knowing and understanding your purpose, a lot of the other stuff tends to fade away, the comparison and all this other. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's not important. It's not essential.
So let's focus a little bit back on clarity then, because I'm thinking if that's one way to get them out of the comparison, what do you call it? Comparing inferiority? What do you call it?
Comparison inferiority complex.
Oh, I love that. That's CIC. Now, so how do you help? What would you suggest and tips you help in them getting clarity on what their purpose and understanding their purpose is?
One of my mentors there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about him is Dr. Miles Monroe.
Oh, I love him.
And Dr. Monroe said years ago, he said the four most important questions that men should answer is, where have I been? Why am I here? What can I do? And where am I going? Those four questions. So to help men come to a place of clarity, Number one, where have I been? So that's looking over the totality of your life and celebrating the ups, the downs, the ins, the outs, the wins, the losses. Where have I been? Because that's your learning to date. Then the why am I here is understanding, in Dr. Monroe's words, the greatest tragedy in life is not death. The greatest tragedy in life is to be alive and not know why. So that, that why am I here question gets into your story. There's some folks who, Martin Seligman out of University of Pennsylvania, talks about your self-explanatory style and how you explain a situation to yourself or how you explain where you're going. So when you answer the why am I here question, you begin to explain, this is what I see, my self-concept, my self-perception, right? Then the what can I do question, critically important, because Dr. Christian Mirescu out of Princeton University says, when the brain is worried, the brain slows down. And when the brain slows down, it doesn't create neurogenesis, which is the process of growing neurons, which grows the brain. So every man listening to us has to say, what can I do? Or biblically, what do I have in my hand? What can I bring to the marketplace, right? And then the fourth question, the where am I going, is a powerful question. I was with another one of my mentors, Tudor Bismarck, in Harare, Zimbabwe, a few months ago. And he said to me, do you have a 20-year strategic life plan? And I said, why do I need a 20-year strategic life plan? Because he said, in 20 years, you're going to be older, and you're going to wonder, where did your life go? And you'll be 20 years older, and you'll say, what happened? And all of a sudden, by the time I left Zimbabwe, I was already thinking of a 20-year strategic life plan.
Now, you mentioned some great mentors in your life, and I know this kind of looked a little bit of a sidetrack, but I know for the men out there, the reason why we put Real Men Connect together, because we want to stress the importance of being connected to what I call Paul's, someone who's been there, done that, has the T-shirt, and can kind of lead you the way. How'd you develop your or get connected to your mentors, and how can you share how we can do the same?
Number one, I got connected because there was a gap in my knowledge and my wisdom, and I needed to close that gap. There was just some things I didn't understand. Number two, I had heard of Edwin Lewis Cole, Dr. Edwin Lewis Cole, 25 years ago, and he wrote a book called Communication, Sex, and Money. And when I read that book, he talked about the power of being connected with other men. So I, number one, start reaching out to guys that I respected who were a little bit further up the path. So most of my mentors are probably 10 to 20 years older than me. And I just start reaching out to them. The second thing, I didn't go to them with hat in hand. I went to serve to find out what is it that I could do to serve them, to help them. That's how I met Jim Rohn. That's how I got connected to Zig Ziglar, and just really went to serve. The third thing is being able to execute on what your mentor says and then go back to them and say, when you said this, this is what I did. So I've gone back to Dr. Sharona to let him know the seed of what he planted. You weren't born to fit in. You were born to be brilliant. That seed has now turned into 7 books. It's turned into an amazing business. It's allowed me to work with 1,000 organizations on 6 continents. The seed spoken from a man into a man who was acting like a little boy, but had the potential to blossom and grow into a man.
Oh, Simon, I love that, man. You go there with a servant mentality. And I love that you said, and go back and let them know what has happened as a result of the advice that they've given you. I remember when I met Zig Ziglar, and he just so freely was with his time, allowed me to hang out with him for a couple of days. And just, he was more so focused on my character, more so than showing me how to get into the business of speaking. Mm-hmm. But you were right. When I went back to him to share with him what that did for me, it really blessed him. And I think a lot of times we don't go back, even if it's our teachers from our schools, we don't go back and remind them that English teacher you mentioned, that we don't often get a chance to go back and tell them that you made a difference. That one thing you did for me, you know, that assignment you gave me, that piece of advice that you gave me. So I'm glad that you outlined that for us. Now, you know, you talked a little bit about cut. You talked a little bit about clarity. I want you to unpack color for us a little bit more. Elaborate on that.
Yeah, so I heard Tudor Bismarck say something years ago. He said, within every brain, there is a mind. Within every mind, there is a belief system. And within every belief system, there is a shaper. Within every shaper, there is an agenda or story. So when I talk about the color of the diamond, it has to do with who is shaping your worldview that creates your belief system that controls the thoughts that you think, because you become what you behold. So every man listening to us has to be mindful of, as I am receiving information in, how is it shaping my speech, my behavior, and my habits? Because what we discovered on this whole road to being brilliant is that, in the words of Mike Murdoch, you don't decide the future, you decide your habits. And your habits decide the future. The secret to understanding what we call brilliance is hidden in the daily routine. And the daily routine comes to being as a result of, what's that worldview and who has shaped my perspective and shaped how I see the world?
Oh, I love that. That is great. And now, what about carrot?
Because
I want to know, how is that different from your clarity, knowing what your purpose is? You said the size of your dream.
Right, right.
Explain the difference.
So once I'm clear, clarity, mm-hmm. once I understand my worldview, once I understand the cut, the experience, now I'm free to dream as big as I want to go after that thing that's in my heart.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So the carrot is, how big do you want to be? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's, you're only limited by the size of where you find yourself at, right?
Right.
So what I say to people now, go for it. So we've just recently updated our whole purpose statement, and our purpose statement ties to carrot, and our purpose is to inspire 1 billion people on the planet.
Yeah, I saw that.
How to be brilliant in an average world. That's really big.
Oh,
but
that's
here's
awesome.
The thing, that I know that I can't do it by myself.
Right.
So we've got to find other, you know, people to help us get there.
Oh, that I love that. When I saw that on your website, I'm like, wow, that is a bodacious goal. But I love it. But you're right. You can't do it by yourself. Now, I want to kind of transition a little bit, and we're going to take you back. When you were younger. Now, you said that you had some struggles growing up as a kid, and they had to anoint you with some oil to kind of get you back on track. But I'm going to take you back to a specific age. Simon, we're going to go back to 21, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if you could go back now and see Simon at 21, a younger version of yourself, what would you tell him to do first now?
I would have told him to buy that stock at Home Depot and Microsoft.
No, that's right.
When I was 21, I had some friends approach me in Atlanta. I was living in Atlanta, and we had just gotten our bonuses. And we weren't making a lot of money, but a $1,000 bonus to a 21-year-old is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them said, hey, we just heard of this company called Home Depot. We're going to buy some stock. And I was like, I ain't never heard of them. I'm holding on to my $1,000. Well, I checked back with my friends 10 years later. And I said, did y'all ever make that investment? They said, not only did we make the investment, we cashed out and made $250,000.
Holy moly.
What it really spoke to me is, sometimes you're short-sighted.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the lack of information and the lack of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, that was my reality. So I would have told myself at 21, you need to buy that stock.
But when you're in that point where you do have the lack of information, what's the best way to kind of break through? Because a lot of us can look back now at 21 and say, boy, we wish we would have done that and wish we'd done. I wonder, is there a formula or some type of antidote for being unstuck in not making and pulling the trigger and doing that thing? What do you suggest? When
get a passport and travel.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I think that's the greatest education, I grew up in the ghetto of Buffalo, New York, lived in the ghetto of Atlanta, and my exposure was very limited because I was limited by the zip code 30314 that I lived in. I couldn't see beyond that. So here was this whole world moving around me. And so now today I tell kids and men, get a passport, go and see the world, because it opens you up to other possibilities. That's number one. Number two, subscribe to magazines beyond your comfort zone that stretch your lexicon, that expand your worldview. And then the third thing, you should have a personal board of directors. Every man listening to us should have a personal board of directors made up of 3 to 5 guys that work in different core competencies, different areas of discipline that are not your core area. Because what you can do is borrow brilliance from them, understand what's working in another industry, how do you apply it to your industry? And it's that thing that begins to shape and impact your thinking.
Oh, I love that. Borrow their brilliance. I never heard that before. I like that. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to take you back to 21 again. Now, we know now you would have bought some stock in Home Depot. But what would you do better as a 21-year-old when you go back and say, you know what, do this better?
Yeah, I would have managed money better. I think one of the things that that during that age, I never saw a dollar that I couldn't spend. So I would have really encouraged myself to be a better steward, right? Intentionally. I would have also told myself when I had the opportunity to buy real estate and invest in rental property, do it. Don't wait. Do it. Figure it out. I think the other thing is I would have embraced failure and mistakes quicker and faster instead of being apprehensive. I would have taken more risk. I wouldn't have played it safe. I would have got on the edge of adventure for who I would have become in the process, right? So quick point. Gordon Dalby, who wrote the book Healing the Masculine Soul, tells a story of a guy who was having a reoccurring dream of a ferocious lion chasing him. And whenever the guy would have this dream, he would take off running. And one day he went to see a counselor, and the counselor said, the next time you have the dream, stop, face the lion, look the lion in the eye, and ask the lion, who are you? Why are you chasing me? So sure enough, a couple of weeks goes by, and this guy has this reoccurring dream of the lion chasing him. So he takes off running, but then it dawns on him what the counselor says. So he turns around, stops, faces the lion, looks the lion in the eye, and says, who are you? Why are you chasing me? And the lion said, I'm your strength and courage. Why are you running from me?
Wow. Wow.
I think at 21, I would have turned and faced the lion a lot more.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Who I would have become in the process, you know.
That is great. Now, you know, it's that time of the show, Simon, I warned you about. I said we do man up questions, okay? And now, mm-hmm. in this time for the man up questions, there are just 5 quick questions starting with the letters MANUP, and they just require fearless honesty, which I don't think you'll have a problem with. So the question is, are you ready?
Yes.
And we'll get started right after this short break.
If you're like most men in our audience, you're committed to becoming the man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be. But the truth of the matter is, you struggle with either finding the time or knowing where to start. That's exactly why I created the Real Men Spiritual Leader Blueprint, to give you a step-by-step, easy-to-follow guide to spiritually leading your family, even if you're a new believer. Now, you can't buy the Real Men Spiritual Leader Blueprint, but you can get it for free by signing up for our free e-newsletter. By signing up, you will be notified anytime fresh content is added to my site, so you don't always have to visit my blog to stay up to date on the latest information. Now, to get your free copy of the Real Men Spiritual Leader Blueprint, just visit realmenconnect.com and simply enter your name and email address on the form on the page. So if you're tired of trying to figure it all out and fit it all in as the spiritual leader, provider, and protector of your family, don't miss your chance to discover how to be the man God called and created you to be. Sign up today at realmenconnect.com.
All right, we're back with Simon Bailey. And Simon, I told you that it's time for the man up questions. And the first letter starts with the letter M, and it represents mistake. Now, what mistake did you learn the most from as a man?
You know, the biggest mistake I learned is you got to follow your gut. There are some business deals that I went into knowing intuitively that I should have done something different, and I didn't listen to my gut. My wife had shared her wisdom with me, what she thought, and I said, no, I've ran the numbers. It's got to be this way. So it was probably the biggest mistake, and it cost me money. I had to get an attorney involved, you know, and bail me out of a couple of things. But I would have really followed my instinct and really stuck with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the A stands for attitude. And you work with a lot of men, and you see the struggle that we have as men. If there's an attitude you could change in men, and we're talking about husbands, fathers, or what have you, what would it be?
I would encourage men to practice wait And wait simply means, why am I talking? Now hear it in the context of why I'm saying this. Sometimes we can talk too much and we don't listen to understand. We talk to reply. So I would encourage all men that whenever we are in a setting, why don't we just wait, ask more questions, and listen more. But then when we respond, especially to women, don't just ask closed-ended questions, ask open-ended questions that create a deeper dialogue to build a connection. But practice the wait. Why am I talking? Because you want to listen to understand instead of respond.
Oh, that is good. That is good. Now, Simon, the N stands for next. And we know that with the Brilliance Institute, you are doing some great things, and you had the book out and written several books. But I want to know the next thing that you would attempt to do for God if you knew you couldn't fail.
I would do three things. I would be very philanthropic and give a percentage of the proceeds of everything I'm doing to help nonprofits that are in the inner city really help encourage young men and women to graduate from high school, go to college, make something of their life. That's number one. Number two, I would intentionally build homes in communities where guys are coming out of prison and they want to be rehabilitated, just to give them a shot. But I would embed the curriculum of everything that we've taught, that they go through our courses, they go through our lessons, things that would really help them be relevant again in society. And I think the third thing that I would do is I would try to look out for the widows that are in the community whose husbands have gone to the other side. And I'm talking women like in their 60s to 80s. You know, they are the older boomers and some a part of the greatest generation. And I would ensure that the community would surround them and not let them think that they have been forgotten about, even though their husbands have laid down their lives for the community and society at large.
And that's just awesome, because that's right in line with what Christ has commissioned and commanded us to do. And we're supposed to be looking after the widows, those who are fatherless, and those mm-hmm. who are incarcerated. And we're supposed to have a servant heart. So, I mean, I love that that's where your mind is and your heart is going towards that. Now, I just asked you about the next, but now the U represents understand, Simon. And when you were younger, what was the one thing you didn't understand about being a man, but you know better now?
That I am so glad I'm a man and not a woman.
I'm glad we don't have a lot of women listeners out there.
No, seriously, all jokes aside. I think the one thing I understand now that I didn't know then is, at the end of the day, you have to have a relationship with God for yourself, that you're not going to be all that you can be if you hold on to the coattails of how mom and dad believed. And that was just a huge learning for me, to know that I could talk to God real time, right where I was at. He knew what was going on in my life, and I could be totally transparent with him and really understand the love of God at a whole deeper level. But I think what's even more powerful is, when I had children, I discovered this whole like level of love I didn't know I had. But when I had them, it made me realize how much I'm loved by God.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That is good. Now, the last letter is P, and P stands for problem. And as a mighty man of God, Simon, which you are, what one problem in your life do you still struggle with as a man, even today?
I struggle with balance. Mm-hmm. I try to do it all. I sleep very little. I work a lot. And sometimes I don't know how to turn it off, because my work is my life. And I have intentionally and purposely have started playing golf, trying to take a day off and maybe just go to the movies, have a little downtime, and not be so all in and so intense. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So finding some balance and finding some rest.
Yes, yes.
I love that. Now, and thank you for sharing those, answering those man up questions for us. I really appreciate that. Now, before we close, though, and I know we've talked about being brilliant, some of the obstacles that men face, but I didn't spend a lot of time on this, so I want to close out the show with this last question for you. What advice would you give us as fathers, as even as husbands, that we can do to bring out the inner brilliance in our children and in our mate?
Yeah, I think five things very quickly. Number one, see them for who they are, not for who you are. Number two, help them harness their potential. Number three, increase your emotional deposits that you give them through your words, through your actions, through your behaviors. Number four, fuel their mind, constantly stretch their thinking. Ask them, what do you see? What do you know? What do you believe? Stretch their thinking. And then finally, the fifth one is take the time to let them know how valuable they are to the world and to you.
Simon, I really appreciate you sharing that with us, because that, I mean, even that alone could go a long way for a lot of the fathers and husbands out there who are listening, because we tend to forget that the people closest to us need that the most. And so thanks for sharing that with us. And guys, we've come to the end of our show for today, but don't you worry, we'll be back and do it all again next week with a new guest, with new insights and new lessons. So make sure you don't miss it. And I'd like to just thank Simon Bailey for joining us today and for being so gracious with his time. Thank you, Simon, for just being such an obedient servant of servant leader of God and just helping our men today grow as husbands and fathers. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Simon, quickly for us, if our listeners wanted to find out more about you and what you're doing and with the Brilliance Institute, how could they contact you, or where could they go to find out more information?
They can go to simontbailey.com, Simon T, T like Tom, Bailey.com, to find out everything about us.
All right. Well, great. Thanks, Simon. And to all of you out there, please do us a favor. This is so important. Take about 30 seconds or so and go over to iTunes and rate the program. It's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. And please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. Until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with RealMenConnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man God called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until the next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in his grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.
Real Men Connect is a listener-supported podcast, and we're now the number one radio podcast on iTunes for Christian men. If this podcast has blessed you in any way and you'd like to help us continue to bless and transform the lives of even more husbands, fathers, sons, and leaders, please prayerfully consider supporting this ministry. Just go to realmenconnect.com and click on the donate button. And may God bless your faithful giving.